Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Means that the number one pick in the 2021 NBA draft goes to the Detroit Pistons.
Who's got the number one pick in this year's draft? Who's got the number one pick in this year's draft?
Basketball!
Select Isaiah Stewart.
The Detroit Pistons select Killian Hayes.
Sadiq, that was absolutely sensational.
I don't know what went into that process. I met the criteria to be selected, but I wasn't.
From long range.
Detroit Basketball!
What's going on, Pistons fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Palace of Pistons podcast brought to you by Believe. Aaron Johnson and Jasper Apollonia here with you. And, you know, Jasper and I, we were so excited for this week's show. We were teased with the return of Mike Anguilano. And about an hour and a half ago, right before we're, you know, an hour and a half before we're about to record, this guy one-ups us. He's got to back out of the show. He's got to go to a work meeting. He's big time. He's a big shot. And now you're stuck with just Jasper and I again. But Jasper, hey, you came here this week. Thank you for coming. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm getting over the fact that Mike, just like the Detroit Tigers, tries to get my hopes up and then expertly dashes them every year. It's really a common theme in my life right now. It's very ephemeral. It's quite allegorical, if you will. Plato, eat your heart out. But yes, I'm doing all right. I'm happy to be with you here. And as disappointed as I am not to have Mike with us, I do understand that when you're living that big money baller lifestyle, it's a grind every day. So Mike, big shout outs to you. Keep living it up. You're the new Gary V of the next generation. So, yeah.
We will try again next week with Mike. We got a couple of good topics to get into today. I'm not sure which one I'm more interested in talking about, but they'll be fun conversations as they tend to be here on the show.
We're hitting on the Mike Anguilano NFT project that's coming up. Folks, you don't want to miss out on this. It's the investment opportunity of a lifetime.
Yeah, can't wait to be sponsored by Mike. Instead of him being a host on the show, he's going to be a sponsor of it for his NFT project.
I can't wait for it.
Let's get into our first topic. Before we do that, though, we do want to talk about our wonderful sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BLEAV50, BLEAV50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right. So if you were a betting man, would you have bet on the Pistons to re-sign a player that they traded last season? And was brought back to the team because of a failed physical via the player he was traded for. Would you have bet on them to bring him back in the next offseason? Because that's what Detroit just did. It was reported by Keith Smith that the Pistons had re-signed guard forward Rodney Magruder to a one-year contract. James Edwards of The Athletic then also confirmed it. It was at least a partial guarantee, if I recall correctly. I did not pull that up, so I apologize for not having that information, but I do believe it was at least a partial guarantee contract, making it sound as if Magruder will be one of those players battling for one of the final spots on Detroit's roster for the 2022-2023 season. The Pistons, with the signing of Magruder, have 16 players on guaranteed contracts, and then they also have their two-way spots filled as well. So there is a player that's currently employed by the Pistons that's going to have to go. It makes for an interesting discussion here, even though, you know, we're still over a month out of training camp. These are some of the discussions that, you know, even though the Pistons haven't gone to camp yet, they're already starting to have, because they're officially over the cap for their roster. They can't have as many players as they currently do. They're going to have to cut at least one of these players. Rodney Magruder appears to be one of these guys fighting for the final spot. You know, I don't know who else is in that same situation. You know, you look at it maybe being a guy like Saben Lee, perhaps. They signed Kevin Knox to a two-year deal, so I don't feel as if he's one of those guys, even though he's probably, in terms of current talent level, the worst player on the roster. Maybe he's better than Saben Lee. I really don't know. And if you want to have a discussion on who's the 15th most talented player on your NBA roster, you can do that somewhere else. We're not going to do that here right now. But Rodney Magruder, first off, Jasper, your initial thoughts on the Pistons deciding to bring him back, even if it's just for a little bit here.
Well, I mean, frankly, it makes sense. He's a veteran locker room presence. He's obviously a guy that they value in that sense. And frankly, he's a guy that they've been able to depend on the last two seasons. Yes, he's only played 67 games and barely played in those 67 games, but he's been quite efficient. He's been able to step in and give them a little bit of shooting. And look, if I'm Saben Lee, I'm not feeling very good about my spot on this roster right now, because the two of them are, like you just said, fighting it out for that 15th, 16th man role, you know, along with somebody like Kevin Knox. But Kevin Knox actually fills more of a need than having a fourth point guard. Rodney Magruder also is a little bit more versatile. He can play kind of 1-3, depending on the lineup you're throwing out there, whereas Saben Lee is only an on-ball guard. So if I am Saben, look, all I'm saying is I hope that Mike Angulano did not sell his house to Saben Lee, because that was not a very good decision on Saban's part if he did. I'm not feeling good about his chances being in Detroit. Do I think he still has a chance to get picked up for another team, maybe make another two-way? Sure. You know, he is a very, very quick guard, and he did show flashes his rookie year, but frankly, he didn't look good in summer league. He didn't look good last year. And when we're talking about end of the bench players, Rodney Magruder's outplayed him over the last two seasons, plain and simple. So if I'm looking at it from that perspective, I actually do think Rodney Magruder, more likely than not, will beat out Saben Lee for a roster spot. Perhaps he won't, but it really won't be a big deal either way, as these are the definition of like break in case of emergency type of players. These are the kind of guys that only should be seeing the court for you if things have gone extremely, extremely wrong for the franchise this season.
Yeah, I thought this was an interesting decision, just because of what I mentioned earlier. Like, this is a guy that the franchise traded last year midseason at the deadline to acquire Bol Bol. Then the trade was rescinded because Bol Bol failed his physical. And
Aaron, it's so crazy that Rodney Magruder was actually suited up and on the bench for Denver for one of those games. I do wonder if that's ever happened before in NBA history. I'm sure it has, but still kind of crazy to think that the trade got rescinded, even though the guy actually suited up for the other team that he got traded to.
Right. The field physical part's nothing new for the Pistons. I mean, we saw that, you know, during the Stan Van Gundy era with Donatas Mateyunas. But the part where Magruder was legitimately on Denver's bench for a game, dressed to play. Now, he didn't play, but he was dressed to. I don't know if there are any, if there are, it's very few cases where that's actually happened in the NBA. But I thought it was interesting that they decided to bring him back after that. I don't think there would be, I think some players would absolutely decide, X that team off the list of even considering going back there. Maybe a player like Rodney Magruder doesn't necessarily have that ability because he is a back-end roster guy. You know, maybe there weren't four or five teams lining up to sign Rodney Magruder. But he is that pro's pro that everyone talks about in the locker room. So for him to not have that type of attitude isn't surprising. But even so, like, the signing does in a vacuum make sense. This is a guy that, you know, on a team that is very, very bad shooting wise, actually can shoot the basketball. But again, you're right. He is not a guy that should be playing minutes for the Pistons. This is a move that whether he makes the roster or Saben Lee makes the roster, or if there's a third candidate, a dark horse candidate somewhere else that on this roster that makes it over or makes it over these other guys, it really shouldn't matter. And that's because these guys just aren't good enough players to matter on good enough teams. So this signing just doesn't really mean all that much to me, whether they pick Magruder, they pick Lee, or they pick someone else, or maybe they keep them both and they're trying to offload another contract right now, like a Kelly Linick, which is something that we've talked a little bit about before. Like, this is a guy that, you know, Linick might not be on this roster come the beginning of the season. You know, we do know that the NBA is essentially in a holding pattern right now across the league as teams continue to wait on Kevin Durant and on Kyrie Irving, and even now on Donovan Mitchell. So this isn't necessarily the final version of the roster that you're going to see come October. But at the same time, you know, this is it's fine that the Pistons brought him back. He's not a guy that's, you know, obviously he's not breaking the bank for Detroit. He's not putting them in a tough cap spot. And honestly, if we really are going to have that debate over who the Pistons should have as their 15th guy on the roster, I would prioritize a shooter rather than a fourth point guard on a roster that has Cade Cunningham, Killian Hayes, Corey Joseph, Jaden Ivey. Like, there are enough ball handlers on this team right now. There's nowhere near enough shooting on this roster. So I would absolutely value the guy that in an absolute pinch could come in and help space the floor a little bit over a guy that outside of G League success really has not proven himself at the NBA level. So overall, this move doesn't move me in any real way. I don't feel too strongly about it. I think it's fine. I'm not sure if you have anything else to add on this. I know this was kind of a quick topic. I don't think it needs to be an elongated topic because at the end of the day, This is not a make or break move for the Pistons next year.
No, not at all. I think if anything, Aaron, it's more indicative of the fact that the franchise is in a good place, obviously, in terms of its relationships with its players. The fact that Rodney and Magruder got traded and then came back and still wanted to re-sign in Detroit, I think it's a really good, really good sign for that front office that they have good relationships with players, even if they do move on from them. I think it's also probably a good sign that you have somebody like that in your locker room, somebody that is a veteran that knows it's just a business, that's treating it like a business, and is likely going to impart those same kind of thoughts onto the players that are younger than him, that are in the locker room along with him, your guys like Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, just like you said. So yeah, obviously in terms of like on the court impact, it should not matter really at all. But in terms of off the court impact, in terms of like looking into the health of your franchise, I think the fact that Rodney McGruder is back speaks volumes again to where the Pistons are right now.
One final thing I'll say on this is, you know, the with McGruder, the Pistons now have four guys on the roster that are over the age of 30, him, Corey Joseph, and then Kelly Olynyk and Alec Burks. Everyone else outside of Nerlens Noel is essentially 25 and under. So I will say that that might play a factor. This is a team that does probably need some veteran guys in the locker room. I'm of the mindset that while having veteran guys is nice, they need to be more player guys that can actually give you value and give you minutes rather than end of roster spot guys that, you know, might be not necessarily wasting a roster space, but it maybe isn't the most valuable way to use that final roster space. But on the flip side, maybe the Pistons feel that McGruder does provide them enough value, you know, at that 14th, 15th roster spot, and brings that veteran presence as well. So I think that's where we're going to wrap up that conversation on Rodney McGruder on the 15th roster spot. We might have some more on that, you know, in the coming weeks as we get towards training camp, but we're still, again, a month plus out of training camp. So let's move on to our second topic. This is probably the topic that I'm most intrigued to talk about. I like these topics that become more of a debate. You get into more analysis, and we're going to talk about what player on the Detroit Pistons roster has the most to prove next season. I think you look across this roster, it's a very young group. There are a lot of guys that in reality aren't fully proven yet. And even some of these guys that maybe are proven that they're NBA players are not proven to be what they need to be for this Detroit team near future and long term. So right now and long term. Jasper, I'll start with you. Who's the Piston in your mind that has the most to prove in the 2022-2023 season?
Well, Aaron, when I was first thinking about this, what I was thinking about was perhaps guys that are on the fringes of the roster. Killian Hayes's, maybe your Isaiah Stewart's, guys that are looking to take a step forward this year and see what kind of players they are. But for me, I'm going to take somebody that maybe isn't the first person that you think of when you think, hey, this guy needs to prove he belongs. It's Cade Cunningham for me. And the reason I say this is not because Cade Cunningham needs to prove that he is a good player. We know he's a good player. It's not because Cade Cunningham needs to prove that he is the future of this franchise, at least in the short term, because we know this is the guy they are building around. When I say Cade Cunningham, in my opinion, has something to prove this year, I think it's more in regards to his ceiling. How far can Cade Cunningham take this roster? How far can Cade Cunningham take his own abilities? How much can he grow as a player and as a leader? What is his ceiling? And when I think about where this franchise is going, it's all going to depend on just how good Cade Cunningham is. So when I look forward to the season, I'm looking forward not just to see growth from Cade, because I know I'm going to see it, not just to see that he's a good player, because I know he is, but how good can he be? Is he a top 10 player? Or is he a top 20 player, top 25 player? Because the difference between a top 10 player in this league and a top 25 player in this league is massive. We're talking top. I'm sorry. Yes.
What's his realistic, since you started throwing out, you know, tier of player, top 10, top 20, top 20. What do you think that realistic ballpark is for him next year? I mean, do you think he can get, you know, that high top 25 in year two, or where do you think that number lies for next year?
Oh, I certainly think he can get top 25 next year. I certainly think he can. I mean, you look at who are the top 25 players in the league. We're talking about guys like, and obviously this is debatable, we're talking about guys like Jaylen Brown and Fred VanVleet and Drew Holiday, and Zach LaVine, those kinds of players, maybe Chris Middleton. We're talking about guys that are really, really, really good, but not the best player on a championship team. And the difference between a top 25 guy like a Jaylen Brown and a top 10 guy like a Jason Tatum is the difference between this team going somewhere and this team going all the way. So when I look for Cade Cunningham next year, what I'm looking to see from him is that kind of leap that you see from primary ball handlers in their second year. This is, across the board, usually the case. We saw it from Ja Morant. He went in his first year from being very good to his second year, taking the Grizzlies to the playoffs. We saw it from Trae Young. He had a very good rookie season, but his second season, he almost dropped 30 points a game. Saw it from Luka Doncic. Great first season, all NBA second season. Kevin Durant, no different. Issues with efficiency, especially in his outside shot. People forget, KD shot 28% from three as a rookie. So generational basketball players struggling with efficiency in year one, LeBron, the same issue, is nothing new. What I'm looking to see from Cade Cunningham is how much of a leap he takes in that second year. Is he going from being a very promising but somewhat flawed creator, primary option, to being a full-blown all-star? Or is it just more of a slow general progression? When I say Cade Cunningham has something to prove, for me, that's what it is. How high is that ceiling? I think year two is really when it's going to start to show itself. Because yes, while there is not the level of shooting that you need on the roster still, there is other talent. And there are now, in Jaden Ivey, other players that can give you looks that are different from Cade Cunningham on the perimeter. You have an extra year of growth from Sadiq Bey. You have an extra year of growth from Isaiah Stewart. Where can Cade Cunningham go to? When I'm looking for him next year, I'm trying to see that. Is this the next Trae Young? Is this the next Ja Morant, Luka Doncic, whatever? Or is he simply the next Zach LaVine? Is he simply the next, you know, rich man's Drew Holiday, something like that? For me, that's the biggest question going into next year when it comes to Cade Cunningham.
I like that. I like that a lot. I think that you make some really good points. I don't know if Cade gets to top 25 next year, but at the same time, if this is a guy that's averaging, you know, we've thrown this number out there before, this line out there before, if he's averaging 22-6-6 and he's shooting 35-36% from the 3-point line, he's probably going to be pretty close to that. At least if he's not there, he's going to at least be top 35. And if you look at how he played in the second half of last season, he was essentially averaging that after the All-Star break. Once he was playing 35 minutes a night instead of the 30 he was playing in the first half of the year. So I really like that because it is the most important thing for the Pistons long term, for the Pistons near in the directly next season. Nothing else matters as much as what Cade Cunningham turns into and how fast he turns into it. Literally nothing else matters nearly as much because nobody else has that same type of ceiling. When we talk about Cade Cunningham, we're talking about a player has a top 10 player in the league ceiling. Some might even say higher, but let's just be neutral and say top 10. So whatever he does is going to be most important, whether it's good or bad, whether he doesn't take the leap or he does, that will be the most important thing for the Pistons. No matter what Jaden Ivey does in year one, no matter what Isaiah Stewart or Sadiq Bey does in year three, no matter what type of impact anyone else that was brought onto the team has in their first season with Detroit, what matters most is whatever Cade Cunningham can be, what he does do. So I really like that, and I thought you did a great job kind of laying that all out.
Aaron, I want to quickly say one thing, because you said you're not sure he can take that leap into top 25 player. I think if he doesn't, that is a little bit of a sign for worry for exactly the reasons I just laid out. Maybe you don't think he's KD Luka level, but who do you think were better prospects, Trae Young and LaMelo Ball or Cade Cunningham? Of those three guys, who was the best prospect in your opinion?
Probably Cade Cunningham.
Okay. Well, those other – well, guess what? Aaron, those other two guys in their second years made an all-star team. I mean, dude, Trae Young dropped 29-9-4 his second season of the league. LaMelo just last year dropped 27.5 assists and almost 7 rebounds, plus a steal and a half per game. So, Aaron, I'll actually make the argument, if Cade doesn't take that leap into at least top 30 player in the league next year, I actually think that that is speaking to what I'm saying. That's a little bit of a cause for concern, because that second year is when those top 15 type players make that leap. And if you think he's a better prospect than LaMelo and Trae Young, then there's no reason he shouldn't take that kind of leap too.
That's fair. That's very fair. I mean, I think he's, you know, he can absolutely take that leap into the ballpark. I don't know if he necessarily gets all the way into top 25. He certainly can. Don't know if, you know, if I was going on Bet Online and making that bet, I don't know if I'd place it. But
at least an all-star level player. That's what we're saying. Top 30. There's 15 players on each all-star team.
Sure.
Forget top 25, top 30. Is he an all-star level player next year? If he's not, that is, I'm not going to give up on Cade, don't get me wrong, but I'm going to start taking a step back and reevaluating where he's at. I've just got to be honest, because you have to. There's a track record of too many players in the NBA who are at that top level that have made that leap in their second year for me not to look at it like that.
The leap that Cunningham has to take from the second half of last year to this upcoming season to be an all-star level player really is not that big of a leap, because he really was an all-star level player post all-star break last year. The efficiency comes up a little bit shooting wise. The turnovers go down a little bit. This is a guy that's going to be averaging 22-7-6. That is an absolute all-star level player. So you're on there. I don't disagree with you. So let's make that clear. I'm not in disagreement. I do want to go in a completely different way with my pick. My pick is Killian Hayes, and it's not, you know, what type of player can he be? What type of, you know, can he be an all-star? There's, he can be top 20. I'm talking about Killian Hayes proving he belongs on the Pistons roster long-term. Every good team in the NBA has good to great backup guard play. Look at Memphis. Look at the leap that they took this year. Like, obviously, Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, huge. You know, the health of Jaren Jackson, huge. What was very, very important for them, especially it got shown in the playoffs, having Tyus Jones. Having Tyus Jones as a backup pointer. Man, that's a terrible way to make a point when you forget the first name of the player. But having Tyus Jones was critical for Memphis.
That's why they paid him.
Exactly. He got $15 million a year as a backup point guard. It's so important. I mean, look at just some of these other guys that are so super, super important, and they're, you know, coming off the bench. They're backups. They're, you know, they'll start sometimes, but these are guys that are backing up coming off the bench. Tyler Hero. Hell, look at Jose Alvarado for New Orleans in the playoffs. I mean,
Aaron, just look at Golden State during all their title runs. Leandro Barbosa, Sean Livingston, Jordan Poole. They've had great, great bench guards.
The list can go on and on and on. I mean, Ricky Rubio, Peyton Pritchard, Derek White, like serious guys that really can impact, you know, how a team performs. Can Killian Hayes prove he's that type of guy? He's going to be 21. He just turned 21, so he's going to be early 21 years old once the season starts. This is a guy that last year, under 7 points a game, 4 assists, the shooting got worse from the three-point line. It got better from inside the arc. The jump inside the arc was definitely good to see. It's not good enough, but 45% from inside the arc, still only 26% from the three-point line. This is a player that I think, even if he has disappointed the Pistons, the fan base, in terms of how he's played in his first two seasons, I still think he has immense importance to this team, because I don't think that the Pistons have a backup point guard that can be that same type of player that we talk about on a playoff level team. Corey Joseph isn't that. I mean, we're talking about Saben Lee potentially not being on the roster next year, so obviously he's not that. Alec Burks, you know, he can play some point. He also plays on the wing. I don't love him as much completely handling the ball. I'd love to see him off the ball, you know, just being a floor spacer because of the playmaking ability of guys like Cunningham and Killian Hayes. I really, really want to see a meaningful jump from Killian Hayes. And that doesn't mean he needs to become a 40% three-point shooter. I don't think that's realistic anymore. But we just need to see him be comfortable and be healthy, because when he's both of those things, we have seen him make an impact on how the Pistons play. We have seen him string the offense together because he's confident and he's able and he's healthy. This is a kid that seemingly every other game he plays in is taking a shot to the ribs, is twisting his hand, is getting a concussion. Like, I don't know, like, how that happens. I don't know if it's just immensely bad luck, but this is just not a guy that we've been able to see put together a real season in the NBA yet. Going into year three with this team starting to put the pieces together to make that jump into a feisty young team looking to be a play-in team, looking to make the playoffs. Like, they essentially drafted his replacement of partner next to Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey. But there's also no guarantee that Jaden Ivey is going to be able to be that guy. Like, let's be real. We thought Killian Hayes was going to be the point guard of the future for the Pistons when they drafted him in 2020. So as excited as everyone is about Jaden Ivey, it's not a done deal that he's walking in day one and is going to be ready to play alongside Cade Cunningham for 30, 35 minutes a night. So having a guy like Killian Hayes is going to be very, very important for this team next year and in the future. And I still believe that there is something there with Killian Hayes, even though I've spent essentially every podcast since midway through last year, essentially completely taking myself off the Killian Hayes train. I do still believe he can be a player. I don't believe he can be the same player that I thought he could be when the Pistons drafted him a couple of years ago, when I said he was the best prospect in the draft over guys like LaMelo Ball, over guys like Anthony Edwards. But I still believe in Killian Hayes. If he stays healthy, makes some improvement as a shooter, as a finisher, what he does defensively, what he does as a distributor, as a threat in the pick and roll, if the Pistons can curtail their offensive scheme to allowing him to be more of a playmaker in the pick and roll, play with these athletic bigs that the Pistons are putting on the roster, play with shooting around him, I think you're going to see a much better version of Killian Hayes. And having quality guards across my roster, whether they're starting or coming off the bench, is very, very important for me when I'm putting together what I feel is going to be a contender, a playoff level team in the NBA. Yes, Cade Cunningham is obviously the most important piece. Yes, Jaden Ivey is super, super important as well. But Killian Hayes being that third guard, we don't know what Alec Burks' future in Detroit is going to be, right? This is a guy that's going into, you know, the final season of a deal. He could very much walk at the end of next season. You need to find foundational pieces, and that can be foundational pieces can be guys that come off the bench. Like I said, Tyus Jones in Memphis is the absolute perfect example, but there are plenty others across the board. The leap for Killian Hayes in year three, very, very important to me. If he doesn't make that leap, I'm not sure that the Pistons can afford to spend time, spend money on keeping him on the roster. So it's very important to me to see what 21 years old Killian Hayes looks like for the Pistons in the 2022-23 season.
Aaron, I totally agree with you in pretty much everything you said. And to be completely honest, half the reason I picked Cade Cunningham as my player is because I knew you'd go with Killian Hayes. He's the obvious guy here. He absolutely needs to improve if he wants a spot on this roster long term. And for all the reasons you just laid out, not only does it behoove him to do so, it also behooves the team for him to improve. They need somebody like him. Yeah, even if he's not a starter alongside Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey, he still can be a crucial part of this team. And, you know, you brought up Tyus Jones. I'm going to go back to another guy I compared us to because I think the parallels are almost eerily similar. Sean Livingston. We're talking about another player who came into the league at 19 years old, really high draft pick, had a lot of problems with injuries, had a lot of problems with scoring, especially with scoring efficiently, despite being a great defender and despite being a great playmaker at an extremely young age. Now, obviously, Livingston's ceiling was a little bit higher. I mean, 6'7" point guard. Killian Hayes is a big boy, and he's pretty strong, but 6'7" point guards don't just grow on trees. Livingston was a little bit different in that sense, but when you look at the numbers, when you look at the struggles in terms of efficiency, and when you look at the playing style, they are really similar. Now, Livingston never developed an outside shot, but what he did do was he developed a deadly finishing game, and especially when it came to that top of the key jumpers. And one of those things you saw Killian Hayes working on and succeeding on, especially in the latter half of last season, was exactly that. Working his way inside the three-point line, getting to the top of the key, and then shooting. And I thought he looked pretty good.
Really good comparison.
I mean, look up the numbers. Look at the basketball reference page. It was just something I thought of at the top of my head. And then looking at it, I actually was like, wow, they're eerily similar. We're talking about guys that actually decreased in their scoring their second year, decreased in their assists their second year, slightly better efficiency. And then in the third year, you really saw Livingston turn it on. Obviously, that happened before he had that devastating knee injury that straight up almost killed him. But Killian Hayes, just like Sean Livingston, has been very injury prone to begin his career. So I think of something like that and where Livingston's career ended up going, where he focused on his strengths. And even though he lost so much of it as his athleticism, he maintained his role as a stupendous defender, as a great playmaker off the bench, as a reliable, dangerous scorer, even if he wasn't a volume scorer. And I think about Killian Hayes, that's the type of player I want to see him start to become this year. I don't need to see him shoot 50% from outside, but you know what I do need to see him do? I need to see him shoot 50% from inside the arc. I need to see him show that he can finish at the rim and provide something in that 13 to 15 foot range as well. Because if he could do that and combine it with his defense, combine it with his passing, you've got a great player, really a great role player. The type of guy that makes the difference between being a playoff team and being a championship contender. So I'm 100% in agreement with you there, Aaron. I think it's a huge year for Killian Hayes.
Yeah, and there's obviously other guys that can be talked about, you know, in this same conversation. I mean, some would certainly say Sadiq Bey. You know, can he be that Chris Middleton type, you know, secondary guy next to a star? Some will say Isaiah Stewart. I mean, we've had these similar types of conversations about guys that do have some stuff to prove still. I think those two names certainly are near the top of that list alongside Cunningham, alongside Killian Hayes. I think another guy that's perhaps interesting here is Marvin Bagley. I mean, he got paid, but I think it's not going to be automatic for him to like, I don't know if he's necessarily, I don't know the best way to phrase this. He's going to get minutes at the beginning of the year, but I don't think it's a spot where the Pistons are going to be forced to play him, because there's enough depth and enough wings and bigs on this team that are going to fight him for minutes. Like, if he doesn't come out and perform, I know he just got some good money, but the Pistons aren't going to be able to just waste the season and not play some of these other guys like Isaiah Livers. You know, they have $12 million also tied up in Kelly Olynyk. They traded for Nerlens Noel. They have Isaiah Stewart, who they're trying to play at the four. Hell, they just drafted Jalen Duren. So It's not necessarily a guarantee that Bagley's going to be given all this time to figure it out still. I mean, he's 23 now. So it's going to have to all come together for him this year. So it's not like there's only a two or three players that can be talked about here. I mean, again, this is a very, very young team that all of them have a lot to prove. So you could certainly go a bunch of different ways in this conversation, but I think Cade Cunningham and Killian Hayes are two guys that have really strong cases in this conversation.
Absolutely. I think the thing with Marvin Bagley, just quickly, because you brought him up, I think the thing for him is, like, is he just a jumpy jump guy that helps get Cade and Ivy and Killian lobs, or is he a legitimate, like, part of this core? And that all comes down to his defense. Let's be real. It's that simple. We know he can score. I'm not even really, you know, the outside shooting, whatever. That's not that important compared to, can he just be, I mean, not even a good defender. Can he just be not horrible? Like, that's really all I'm asking for. Just not to be a giant negative on that end of the floor. Because if he can, you know, if he can even get to, like, just neutral, net neutral, then, hey, that's a really useful player for this team. So you're totally right, Aaron. A lot of guys that absolutely can be talked about in this discussion. And I'm sure that many people will have their own personal choices here. But you're 100% correct in saying this is a big year for a lot of those players, really, to see where they are, not just in the rotation this season, but in the team's plans moving forward when they're trying to win.
Curious to know who you guys think needs to take the biggest leap next year or has the most to prove for the Pistons next year. If you're watching this on YouTube, definitely let us know in the comment section below. But Jasper, that was, you know, about 40 minutes. It's what we've been doing lately. Anything else you want to add before we wrap this one up here?
No, nothing else. Just, you know, waiting for the season to get started, man. These dog days of summer are always hard, but, you know, what can I say? Down here at the good old Basketball Content Factory, we believe in providing you folks with solid, wholesome, homemade, delicious content to fill your little eardrums up. So we hope you enjoy it as always. And yeah, please let us know what you think in the comments section. As the season starts rolling around, we're going to have, obviously, podcasts every week, but more written content coming as well. So keep an eye out for that on our website, palaceofpistons.com.
Yeah, no doubt. We are officially into the dog days of the NBA offseason. August is the most quiet month in the NBA offseason. I think the one thing we'll get this month is the schedule release at some point. We don't have an official date as of now, but it does tend to release about midway through August. So hopefully we'll have that within the next week or two. Maybe there's something there that we'll be able to connect with the Pistons and discuss. I know everyone loves those conversations about, oh, the 5-game Western Conference road trip and all that. So hopefully we can get that relatively soon. We can also talk about how the Pistons got no national TV games or one national TV game while the Lakers got 29 this year and the Knicks got 30. So those conversations will be coming. Don't you worry, folks. But for now, that's going to do it on this week's edition of the Palace of Pistons podcast, brought to you by Believe. Thank you to our sponsor, Bet Online. We will see you guys next week. Take it easy, everyone.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.